Hey friends, how you doing? Welcome back to In Too Deep. I'm your host, Jack Rowland. Joining me today is my dear friend and incredible visual artist, Mo. Mo's vinyl collages are playful depictions of creatures, characters, masks, and mythology. Her works span across works on paper, site-specific installations, and wearable art. Check out her work on Instagram and give her a follow at mo.artist. All right, please welcome to the show, Mo.
Is there a point to all this?
I think we're getting in too deep.
You don't apply.
Bad luck.
Well, I have one speed, I have one gear. Go, 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 go. Go.
I'll tell you when we're getting in too deep, too deep,
too deep, 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 deep.
Yeah. Hey Mo, how are you?
I'm great, thanks Jack.
Good, thanks for coming on.
I'm very excited.
Woohoo!
My first podcast, so.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I saw you on the ABC thing ages ago. And,
oh yes.
A natural. A natural.
I hope so. Well, we'll see. We'll see. Talk to me at the end of the hour.
Totally. So you're up last night till 2 a.m. watching The Doors.
I was. Yeah. I did that disastrous. I was watching The Crown, actually. And
oh, I haven't. I've seen like two episodes.
It made me fall asleep. It's really bad.
You don't like it?
I should love it because I'm a massive Diana fan. And so I was quite keen to get to the seasons with her.
Right.
But it's terrible this season,
really?
I have to say. I kind of feel like they should have stopped.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I fell asleep and then woke up and then The Doors came on TV and I was up till 2 a.m. watching that.
It's a good film. I really liked it.
Yeah, it was pretty funny actually, and really interesting watching it like now after, I think when it came out, I was a teenager, so
yeah,
I didn't kind of get the full scope of the psychedelic stuff. And,
right. You
know, I guess once you've tried psychedelics yourself, there's a whole new spin on it. And
totally.
I was kind of loving all the, I was like, I wonder if they could still make this film now. I do this often, you know, but like I was like all the Native American stuff and juju.
Right, right.
I was like, I wonder if that would still fly.
But yeah, probably anyway, not. Isn't there like not. A, there's like a chief on the stage kind of like looking at him like.
They keep visiting him and, you know. Yeah. So, but yeah, it was pretty funny. He definitely reminded me of a few mutual friends we probably have tramping around Rainbow. So
totally. Well, thanks for making the time so early. It's it's a bit early on a Saturday, I must admit.
It's not too bad.
But yeah.
A beautiful day.
A beautiful, yeah, seriously, right?
Yeah.
I love your work. It's just so, so beautiful.
Aww.
It's amazing.
Thanks, Jack.
Yeah. Like when did you begin? Because I don't think you, were you making art when we first kind of started hanging out and stuff? Or?
No, I mean, probably when I met you, I just, no, actually I hadn't. In fact, the trip, I mean, Jack and I met through an old flatmate of mine and we went all on a trip to Alice Springs probably, what would it have been, 7 years ago or something?
Was it that long?
I think it was.
Probably would have because
maybe
the show I
longer.
Made work on was when I was back at Pappas.
Isn't that
so that
scary?
Was at least five.
And that Whoa. Trip was a catalyst for deciding to quit my job and go back to art. I studied media arts at RMIT.
Mm.
So I kind of completed that degree. I did honours in 2001. So I finished that and at that point I was doing photography, mainly digital imaging, but I never really pursued doing art after uni because I think it was a very different world. I mean, we've kind of talked about that earlier. Just, you know, the art world was very different. It was sort of like you kind of moved to a gallery, you kind of followed very traditional sort of, you know, path towards making art. And I guess in the meantime, like I'd started photography and I'd really loved it because I was in the dark room and I really loved the alchemy of making pictures.
Yeah.
But the course I went into the first year I got in there, they closed the dark rooms and it became all digital imaging. And it was good to kind of learn, but I don't find computers particularly inspiring. So I kind of just felt like, I don't know, the actual medium wasn't really working for me. And I guess photography too is very literal. I felt after art school, it was really important to kind of make work and know what I was making the work about and what it was all going to be before I'd even created anything. And that kind of stifled the creativity, I think. Really, I now believe you should make work, and maybe there'll be a germination of idea, but let the work speak for itself after it's been produced rather than going in with an idea.
Yeah, okay. Yep.
So I ended up working in fashion, actually, for about 10 years and worked as a designer and a buyer and got to travel a lot, and that was great. And then I went on that trip to Alice Springs with our friends, and just throughout that whole experience, I just felt so envious of when we kind of all finished the trip. Everyone was going off to do really interesting things and creative stuff. And I don't know, I just was like, I really miss doing something creative. And I kind of got home and realized I had enough money saved to kind of look after myself for 6 months. So I was like, I'm just going to quit my job and then work out what I want to do next in that next 6 months.
Yeah.
And I kind of, yeah, that didn't quite work that quickly. But in the meantime, I was kind of bored during the days, and I'd gone to a gallery and saw the work of David McDermott, who's pretty famous Australian gay artist, and he did these really beautiful kind of mosaic murals with contact paper, like using holographic contact. And so I saw that, and it was just the material alone. I was kind of like, oh, I remember using that, and I loved playing with stickers and that kind of material when I was a kid. And so I just went straight away and bought some contact paper and some paper and went home and started making these collages using vinyl. And, yeah, a few friends came over for dinner kind of about a week later and saw some of the stuff I'd been playing with. And they were like, these are really good. You should have a show. And I hadn't really thought about going back to art. And so they kind of really encouraged me to kind of show them. And, yeah, I had an exhibition of them, and it went really well. And
that was at that warehouse?
Yeah, so in Albert Street Gallery. So that would have been, I reckon that would have been 5 or 6 years ago now.
I mean, off the top of my head, it feels like two or three years ago. But when you just said that trip was like 7 years ago, it kind of spun me out.
Scary, isn't it?
Was like a really ambitious show, because like how many works did you have? Over 30?
Yeah, I think so.
That's massive.
Yeah. So, yeah, I don't know. The product, it was very easy to produce them, and I really, you know, like the, you know, the flow. I mean, it's kind of funny because, you know, in art school, I remember like all the teachers were always talking about like, find your process and blah, blah, blah. And I was just like, what the fuck are they talking about? But the actual materiality of making, I think, something with my hands, like, and the kind of mental space I would go into, because they're quite labor intensive. Like I cut and layer the vinyl to build up the image. So yeah,
you're a sucker for punishment.
Exactly. Like
it looks so laborious.
It is incredibly laborious.
Do you feel like there's almost, you kind of have to make it laborious to like.
Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. I mean, look.
I do that with my work. I'm like, yeah, how do I make this more laborious? And that justifies it as a real painting.
Totally. Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I can't question. I can, you know, just cut out big chunks and lay it down, but I feel like for me the building up and the layering is part of something else that I really enjoy in it, and you get such good 3D depth. Like I've never been able to draw, so, but strangely I can kind of recreate like I loved doing animals or nature to actually just teach myself how to become better at kind of doing perspective or doing, you know, textures like fur or feathers or whatever. So, yeah, that's been, I don't know, a pretty kind of important part of becoming better at what I do.
Yeah.
And then I can kind of translate that into other works, I guess. So I kind of try and do a bit of both. I still feel like I'm kind of learning to draw almost, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, that's funny, like putting an image together without the drawing process, because I mean, well, yeah. I do it with digital collage, mostly just photography and playing with colors, but a lot of it I'll actually chop up compositions sometimes if it's just not quite there, so, which is kind of problematic from the drawing perspective. Like, I've totally abandoned drawing.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks.
Really? But you're so good at it.
I like it, but I just don't do it. I don't know why. It's weird. But, yeah, I mean, are you just looking at reference photos and then just playing around from there and just patching together?
I use reference photos quite a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same. So it just depends on what I'm making. But, yeah, my mum actually, when I first quit work and I was, like, just floating around trying to work out what I was doing, she gave me a gift of doing a drawing class, which actually really was great to just get the fundamental basics, like just on perspective, how to, like, measure things, and that really assisted me.
I really think everyone should, like, who wants to make art should at least just kind of learn the basics a bit. You don't have to do the basics. You don't have to, like, you don't have to hold on to those rules so dearly, but it's just important to know them and then fuck them off, I think.
Yeah, because I think that was the biggest thing, was just that, you know, what your eye is saying, you know, the length of an arm is not actually what it is.
Yeah,
or once you start breaking things down.
Yep.
But it's quite amazing. I mean, look, you know, now, like, it's quite interesting. Like, I watch a lot of my friends' kids or whatever. They're amazing drawers. They just go and watch, like, some YouTube tutorial and they're, like, doing this amazing drawing.
Yeah.
I'm like, it's pretty amazing that you can access so much through the internet now. And that also wasn't around when I was finishing art school, you know, like, I mean, obviously the internet existed. I'm not that old, but it just wasn't as big a part of our everyday. And yeah, like, now I feel like I've taught myself lots of things through just YouTube tutorials or,
great,
you know, things like that. So it's an interesting time for creativity in that sense, that you can kind of access stuff that you never could before, you know.
Yeah.
For imagery, you know.
Right, totally. I mean, AI generated, have you played with that?
That's so crazy. Fascinating.
Yeah. I've just been painting a mural with someone and majority of the mural has been AI generated.
It's crazy. It's kind of scary.
Not my design or anything, but just backgrounds and all that, like, it's just been AI generated, and then chuck a portrait over the top. It's like, wow.
I know.
The future.
I know.
And you're kind of painting in
Is it going to be robot dogs just painting murals in the future?
Yeah, totally.
It's going to happen.
Yeah.
I know. I mean, look, I think I'm safe for now because everything's hand cut and who knows. But yeah, probably a robot will be able to lay out one of my collages in half the time. So
yeah.
I could be fucked too.
Man, what are you saying about YouTube? Like, I've got a friend, Spencer Rose. He built his entire studio learning carpentry off YouTube. He just literally just did, you know, ceiling, plastering.
It's crazy, isn't
complete
it?
Wooden frame, and he just built, and then he, like, wired it all up and had projectors in it, and he had no experience being a handyman.
Yeah.
Just learned it all from YouTube.
I feel like I've seen that on Grand Designs before as well.
So cool.
But yeah, I think it's amazing. I'm sure you still fuck up a lot. You know, sometimes it's good to just get the professionals in. I don't know if I'd be doing my house wiring.
Yeah.
You know,
totally.
But or plumbing. But yeah, it's like, it is, like, you know, I think we were starting to talk about it before we started recording, you know, just how much it's changed the world, you know, since, you know, even we went to uni, just being an artist, you've got access to just, like, I mean, it's opened everything up, the internet. You can market yourself, you can sell to your, you know, fans, you can meet other artists really easily. Like, I've met a lot of people I've just followed and been interested in their work, and
yeah.
And that's been a really amazing time, I think.
I mean, it's totally changing. Like we were saying before, probably 10 years ago, I guess.
Yeah.
Probably just pre-Instagram, really. Like, you know, the galleries is the window to the art world. Everyone kind of needed that. And now it's just changed so drastically. Like, everyone's got to market themselves, and I kind of really resented that at first. It was like, fuck, we've got to do everything now. We've got to market ourselves. We've got to learn this. But, I mean, it's kind of good, really.
Yeah.
It's good to learn that stuff. It's good to put yourself out, because no one will make your career but you, I really believe.
Yeah.
You know, like, I just feel gone are the days of waiting for your big break, waiting for someone to find you, pick you up. It's just not really like that. Yeah. I mean, maybe for like the tiniest percentage of people, but you gotta hustle, right?
Yeah. And it depends on your, like what you're making as well. You know, like I think, you know, there are people that suit, you know, if you're a painter that's doing massive paintings, it suits to go in a big gallery because they're selling works for a lot bigger amount of money or whatever. Mm. And, or they have clients that are looking for big paintings and want to drop a lot of money. But there's this whole other market of people that want art in their homes. They're intimidated by the gallery model. They don't want to necessarily inquire. And I think...
You can't afford it.
Yeah, exactly. To find a market where you can actually sell direct to people that just might love something and want it in their house and make it affordable, you can actually start to make a living, you know.
Sure.
And it's great. I mean, look, Instagram is amazing. I do worry sometimes though, you're like, I mean, as it's shifting and changing, it's not what it once was. And, you know, you're like, well, one day Instagram will die and then what will happen? What's the alternative then? Mm. But yeah, look, even just being able to have an online shop or, yeah, advertise your shows or whatever. It's definitely a better time for artists, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And I guess galleries have to adapt and work out like how they can benefit artists or, you know, what they can bring to the table because, yeah, look, I mean, so often it is so restrictive for the artist, you know, to be involved with the gallery. And I don't think they can really kind of expect that of artists these days because, like you say, they've got a lot more chances to kind of, you know, approach the market themselves. So
Right. And fill in that gap, you know.
Yeah.
There's a massive gap where, 5,000 and below, I suppose, artwork under $5,000. Which is probably like, that's probably the max I'd spend on an artwork.
Yeah.
I don't think I'd ever spend more than $5,000 unless I was filthy rich. But.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I mean, look, we are artists ourselves.
But most people aren't. Yeah. Most people aren't filthy rich. But.
And I agree. And I think, look, a lot of people I've sold work to have come back and got more. You know, you build your fan base, you know, and they love things and kind of want to get more things. So, yeah, I think, you know, it's totally doable. It's always nerve-wracking. I mean, it's interesting coming off the back of COVID because so many creative people I know just also loved COVID because, you know, they got JobKeeper or whatever. And
yeah,
it was the first time they'd had some stable income.
It's the most financially stable I'd ever been.
Exactly. So, but on the flip side, I guess
it wasn't good for creativity.
No.
Yeah.
And that was kind of interesting. I kind of wonder too whether if you know, like that kind of hunger, that desperation keeps pushing you, you know.
I think so. I think absolutely. I think there's something to that. Yeah.
You know, you kind of extend yourself more. So I kind of think, yeah, I can't work out if we need the living wage or not, you know.
Right.
But yeah. I guess. You know, I think it's true. It's as much as you put in the effort, you'll get things back, hopefully. I mean, if you can find your audience base, you know.
Yeah. So. Oh, speaking of Instagram, just a slight little tangent.
Yeah.
Have you, do you follow Chappelle Corby?
Oh, I do, actually.
She's making epoxy beach clocks.
Oh, no, I have seen them.
I bought one the other day.
No. Oh, my God, Jack. Stop encouraging her.
I'm in full support of Chappelle Corby's reincarnation.
Oh, my God. Her Instagram is really great. I loved it when she broke up with her boyfriend and she just, like, scribbled him out of the photo.
Oh, really? I didn't see that.
Yeah, you'll have to go in deep. It was, like, early on.
I want to show you the one I bought. Just it's a nice one.
That is awesome.
She sent a photo. We've been in contact. I've been trying to get her on and she's
Oh, my God, she would be great.
She's not having it. She's not interested. She's not really interested. So at
she
least
doesn't
I could
trust the media.
At least I could do is get a clock.
God. It's so amazingly bad. Oh my God, Jack, I love it.
It's actually a gift for a friend, but I think I might need to get one for myself as well.
Oh my God, she even sticks the shells on. It is kind of amazing.
It's so good.
So what the waves are
She's
like.
She's an Australian icon. I don't care what anyone says.
Oh my God, I love it. Posting shortly. Oh my God, a ledge.
Yeah, big shameless plug. Everyone get onto Chappelle Corby's Instagram. Yeah, get yourself a clock.
We love Chappelle.
We love Chappelle. Look, we love Chappelle here at Into Deep.
We are the Chappelle Bali era. Yeah. I was definitely, that was the height of my work and we were tracking that whole story big time. But I like that she's reinvented herself in such a
She's killing it. She's killing it. Yeah.
You know, it's, yeah. It was quite the schmozzle, so to be an icon of boogie board covers is an amazing thing.
Yeah, yeah. I know, I was thinking maybe, I was like, fuck, could I ask her to put a little boogie board in that wave? I was like, nah, too far, too far.
Triggering. Chappelle. Yeah, I know. God, Instagram celebs. So she must be like screwing up your algorithm a little bit.
I mean, my algorithm is fucked. It's so bad. It's really like, it's embarrassing.
Yeah.
When I go into the search thing, it's, I don't even want to say. It's just terrible. It's just, male
Eddie
Shapek's
shit. Definitely fucked my algorithm.
Oh my God. He's been on fire lately.
He has. Yeah. He's over 50,000 posts now, I see.
And how many followers?
I know. I think it goes up and down quite a lot.
It's like, that's insane, right? The posting to followers ratio, hold on, where are we? 50,800 posts.
Oh my God. He has to be the most posty person in...
The most prolific Instagrammer around 2,740 followers, which is like, it's fine. Yeah. It's not 50,000.
He's definitely delivering more content than followers, but he is so amazing. My favorite pastime is to try and profile who is that man and what is he about, you know, what is the backstory on Eddie Shapek.
I've tried to figure it out so many times, like, is he rich, is he just did he just save up all his money and buy Versace suits, absolutely loaded, he's a locksmith, he's a real estate agent, he's a I feel like there's something else there. I can't remember.
I feel like he's old money, but they went broke.
Old money. That's what I think. You know, old
like
money.
Maybe a shifty dad.
Right.
Because Mama Mary, she's great.
Mama
she's
Mary,
always
90
there,
plus. Yeah.
Adored. But I think like, maybe the dad ran away with all the money, but was a charming grifter and Eddie's inherited some of this.
Well, I'm really getting into like all the lore of the Eddie Shapek world. Like I've started learning the peripheral characters' names. There's Leo, there's
God. so funny.
But he went live the other day and I jumped on and then he was at this his normal hangout, the Ben Autograph Hotel.
Yeah.
Where the pool parties always happen, where no one's ever in the pool. Yeah. But he still promotes as the pool party.
It's because they're
on
fake
the rooftop.
Tan bleeds
And then he went downstairs and he's just live streaming and Roger Stone was at the, do you know Roger Stone? He's like one of the main guys who got Trump in and he's giving like a talk and he's just like standing at the window just live streaming. Security came out to remove him. I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah, maybe he works for the FBI. This could be an elaborate ruse. I mean, the whole Mar-a-Lago papers thing, that could be Eddie snooping around in his dressing gown. I don't know.
I swear he's my ticket into Mar-a-Lago.
I reckon.
He's my ticket into Mar-a-Lago. Fuck. I've got it. Yep. Yep.
Yeah, this presidential run will be interesting. Fuck. Kanye's just thrown his hat in the ring too. And
Did he announce that? Really?
Apparently he went to Trump and proposed to Trump that he become the vice president.
God.
And Trump just threw him out of the room and was like, you're crazy.
Really?
I mean, just the idea of them running together is just, I love it.
What is this
so
world?
Mad. But they probably would get in. That's the scary part, you know.
Probably. That's insane.
Isn't it?
What is happening?
I think insanity is happening for Kanye at the moment, which is sad to watch. But also another part of me was like, why do I keep having so much sympathy for him? Because he's just behaved like a dick for so long. And I keep going, oh, but he's having a mental breakdown. But then you're like, but he's also just had a massive ego and been a dick for years. So
I don't have a whole lot of sympathy. I mean, obviously anyone struggling with mental illness I got sympathy for, but you know, I think it's the narcissism that just grinds my gears. Yeah. It's the only gig I've ever walked out on.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah. I went to see him because I used to, his first two albums, which were just, I can't remember, College Dropout and whatever. They were sick. I really liked them. Just hip hop, good hip hop. And Nas was his support act, and I love Nas.
Yeah.
So I went to see, I was like, oh, I like Kanye, but I mainly want to see Nas. And then when Kanye came on, he went on this, it's like a Rod Laver Arena or whatever it was back then.
Yeah.
And he just, he was when he first started wearing those glasses with the horizontal lines and started doing his auto-tune. I hadn't heard his new music. It was so bad. And then he went on a 20-minute rant comparing himself to the Rolling Stones, the Beatles, and Steve Jobs. I was like, what is this? What is this, like, aggressive TED talk of narcissism? Yeah, where's the music?
Yeah, totally.
It just kept going. I was like, I'm out of here. This sucks.
Yeah. Same as Kim.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fuck, yeah. I know. It's, yeah. It is a weird world, America. You know, it's kind of funny to watch from the sidelines.
I'm addicted to it. It's like,
yeah, me too.
We got the election today, the state election, and I know nothing about Australian politics because it's like dry. It's just dry. American politics. Okay. I listen to American politics shows all the time, and I fully admit I'm not. It's not the system that I like. It's the drama.
It's the drama
that's appealing. And if I learn the system through the drama, then cool. But, oh, it's embarrassing how ill-informed I am on Australian politics.
Yeah, it's true. We're pretty boring, I guess. You know, the Victorian election, it's been very boring,
right?
I think
that's the key. Keep it boring and you can get through whatever you want.
Yeah,
you,
exactly.
Jazz
even
it up
the Tully Dan can get back in.
Kim Dan Un.
But, yeah, that Matthew Guy guy, that Liberals Cuts guys, he's just... So I feel sorry for him. He's having an uphill battle in Victoria, I think. We're just a bunch of greenies down here. I think they don't even seem to try. I don't even think they're doing advertising. They're just like, oh, God.
Yeah.
But no, God. I already voted, but I might go past
good
school
on ya.
And get a...
Get a snag.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Get a cake.
Get a,
from
little...
the cake store.
Definitely.
I do like going on the day, but I was kind of a bit worried I might just forget.
And
I was just like, I'll just get it done. So I did. It was very uneventful.
Yep. Excellent.
Did you vote yet?
Not yet. After this.
Yeah, sweet. Well, I'll see if I can turn you around to this Matthew Guy guy.
For sure.
Change your mind.
Anyway. Hey, you're by the way, love your studio. So nice.
Oh,
and so great to see your... You mentioned before at the start, you know, you're into fashion and stuff.
Yeah.
And you've kind of also managed to make your art full circle into like doing a lot of clothes now. And they're awesome. They've been a massive success. Like they seem to be...
Yeah, no, they have. I mean, look, they definitely ticked me over through winter. And it was kind of interesting because Jack said, I started doing some jumpers using vinyl, so HTV vinyl, which is like a heat transfer vinyl. So kind of cutting and layering and doing collages onto jumpers.
I get comments every time I wear it.
Oh, really?
Every single time.
Oh, that's
awesome.
Like,
what's that? That's sick.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was kind of funny this year. So I kind of was like, yes, I set everything up. I got, you know, my heat press and it was all profesh. But I actually found it slightly distracting. It's been like I'm having an exhibition in February. So I've been hardcore back into doing works on paper and making art again. And that's been really great because I found actually doing the jumpers was really like fun, but it's distracting because it takes a long time to like even just get to a sample that you're happy with.
Right.
And then
right.
you've got to like photograph it and market it and whatever. And it actually ate up a lot of time.
Totally.
So in a way, I think I definitely still want to do it. I think, you know, it's got legs and for next winter or, you know, work out some other ways to expand it. Maybe do some bags and stuff as well because that's nice to cover. But, yeah, it was sort of hard because I think that's the thing. Like I find that aspect of like because I think that was what I decided. I'd been looking for what I was going to do as a job like all through my 20s and 30s. And then when I went back to making art and doing it in this way, I was like, actually, this is my dream job. I want to be an artist. that's what I'm going to go for. I'm just going to make a living from doing art. And that was really exciting. But actually, on some other levels, I think it's terrible because money and art just should not really go together. Like, it's a, you know, like if you're, because you start thinking about the audience before you're making. I don't know.
But that's kind of maybe what's good about doing something like clothing as a side to the art project. But
I agree.
Totally. It is, it's a time. Like Yuria finds the same thing. She does her jewelry, which she loves. I mean, classic creatives like coming up with another creative solution to get out of their like financial troubles. Like,
and it's something a whole you feel like you can market because you're like, you know, jewelry I can sell you, a jumper I can sell you, that can work. But then, yeah, you're like, am I alienating the people that are really just interested in my art? Or, you know, you don't want to be like always feeling like you're selling something to people. I don't know. It's very, yeah, it's a hard one. It's probably more mental than anything, you know, like as a general, like personality thing, I don't want to annoy anyone or be, you know, I'm always like, ah, so yeah, that part. And you know, it's so dumb because you're just kind of self-sabotaging in that respect. You should just put it out there, and if people love it, then great, you know. But yeah, no, I think next winter I'll definitely, and probably timing. I timed some releases at a bad time as well. You know, it was like you've got to get the right time for the weather and when everyone's kind of keen for jumpers or whatever.
Yeah.
Because predominantly I like to use jumpers because they are better with the vinyl. You know, with t-shirts and stuff, it's a bit, I find the vinyl a bit heavy.
Yeah.
On the t-shirt, doesn't feel as nice.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, so I like the kind of thick weight jumpers, but. Yeah, look, I think it was, you know, it's definitely something I'll continue to do. And it is great to be able to diversify a bit.
Yeah.
But, yeah, it is a challenge, like trying to find that balance. Like you say, with Yuria doing jewellery or whatever, you're kind of like, where should I be focusing my attentions and what's working and what's not?
There's only so many hours in the day.
I know, right?
So then you become an artist, then you've got your side hustle, but then you also have to pay rent. So there's a few shifts on whatever you're else, and it's just like, holy shit.
Exactly.
Then you want to have some fun socially. It's,
Yeah. Oh, I mean, look, right now, I think, you know, previously I balanced that better, but now I'm just like, no, all my money just goes on rent and food at the moment. Like, even, you know, I think that's the thing. I was like, I just miss traveling. And I might have to get a job next year.
I want to do another road trip. Let's go to the desert again.
Definitely.
I loved that trip.
Kimberley's or something.
Seriously.
It was, I've got to say, Central Australia, if anyone has not been, you've got to do it at some point in your life.
It's incredible.
Although with people that know what they're doing.
Yeah.
It's definitely zero brutal.
Survival.
Yeah, exactly.
No survival skills.
We would have been.
Imagine you, me, and Stan just stranded while like Stu, Georgia Red, and everyone else just, and Sasha's bails.
We wouldn't even have a bottle of water between us. I'm sure it would
be. Bottle of wine, maybe.
Yeah. Inappropriate clothing we were getting sunburned in. But we were really lucky to do that trip, I think, because we had so many friends who were based out there and they knew what they were doing and could kind of, even like rocking up into, I've been to Coober Pedy before, but Coober Pedy is just like the
that
wild,
place
wild
is
west,
wild,
man.
Like,
it's kind of scary.
I loved it, but it's like, I never would want to live there.
No.
Imagine people that grow up and live in Coober Pedy. Like,
my friend did actually, Jane, she was one of my mum's best friends, and Jessie, her daughter, was one of my besties. And we did this great camping trip, but she was a social worker there. She lived there for a few years, I think. And
there's no trees.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe there's a few, but like it's just barren.
Yeah.
Mad Max world.
She lived in a dugout, which was great.
Was that the one that we stayed at?
No, that was a different person. But yeah, like, wow. Yeah, it's just... Yeah.
It's got like Hills Have Eyes kind of vibes.
Yeah,
totally.
Definitely.
But then there's opals everywhere in the ground. You can just, what do they call it? Noodling? Just
noodling.
Find opals.
Isn't that the
best name? I know. I like, know. It's so cool, but it's so creepy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that place kind of blew my mind that it existed. I remember we were driving around and there was one rusty corrugated iron fence and I think someone just spray painted on with really bad handwriting, "Welcome to Hell."
Oh, God.
I wish I got a photo. Yeah. I was like, fuck.
Yeah, like, it's burnt into your memory now. You don't even need to. No, it's a very, it's definitely worth a visit. But, yeah, look, I would not be setting up a life there either.
Mm.
But, yeah, look, I wonder... I remember Sash saying once, you know, a friend of hers, that they were jinx because they'd worked in mining and an Indigenous person had said, you know, like, it's because you worked for mines that you have all this bad luck. And I was like, I wonder if it's the mining aspect of it, you know, gives it the bad juju, you know.
Mm. Mm.
Sort of like you're taking something out of the earth that shouldn't be. Yeah,
because that's like why it exists, that town, right? It's just mining.
Yeah,
mm.
Pretty much, yeah. But it's kind of, it's really, there's nothing around. I think that's the thing. When you go into Central Australia, you realise how vast Australia is. And, you get that spooky Wolf Creek vibe because you're like, there's no one out here.
Yeah, good place to get rid of a body, Cooper Petey.
No.
Plenty of holes.
Oh, there's heaps of shafts. Yeah. I'm sure there's a gazillion bodies out there for sure.
Oh, totally. God. Did that trip inspire like much of the content? Like in terms of, I suppose, content of your artwork, what, I was looking at your work this morning and I remember it just took me back to, I think, one of those early bodies of work that you were doing when you were looking at all the masks and stuff costumes. That was the first body of work. I loved that. That was amazing. What was the premise behind what cultural costumes were you looking at? Is that even the right framing?
I looked very broadly in the end. The first book that was a catalyst is I found this book called Wilderman. Charles Frager, he's a photographer. He kind of went around mainly Europe, I think, and photographed a lot of pagan kind of festivals and things.
A whole scene, isn't it?
Oh my God.
Pagan, it's like costumes, festivals.
Just it's like them going through dressed all in hay with cowbells on, like terrifying children and getting free
it's
wine.
It's so culty, right?
Yeah, it's so great.
There's festivals where they all dress up and it's so, I don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
It's insane in the best possible way.
Exactly. So I think, I got this book and they just were these amazing costumes and, you know, masks and things. And so I was just happened to be looking at that book a lot when I was kind of first starting to make the collages. So then I just, you know, you'd find particular ones that sort of just speak to you. And I think that's the thing. You just find an image or something sparks something within that you're like, I want to try this. So that happened that way. But I looked very broadly in the end, like a lot. I researched on the internet and stuff like that. Africa obviously was massive as well. That book was probably the trigger and the catalyst to doing that work. Mm. And that's pretty much how I operate, you know, like there's just something that kind of leads you into the next body of work. You know, it was like with the visitors that was sort of stumbling across these embroideries that they made in Peru and thousands of years ago. And we're obviously taking lots of psychedelics, but the embroideries are just amazing.
They're really your second body of work?
Yeah, that was the visitors. And so I was quite interested.
Is that one on the wall? Yeah, that is so cool. What's that kind of, is that God Quetzalcoatl or something?
There's lots of like
animal hybrid-y.
Yeah, hybrids with animals, but like, I mean, mushrooms and stuff are in there. They obviously were taking lots of psychedelics and stuff as well. But also I was very interested even in just perspective because, you know, they were done on fabric. So often when you would turn the image around, they would kind of change the whole look of it. So it would look like someone's falling or if they're, you know, bending back and scratching. I don't know. I was quite interested in that sort of play. And I think I often like that, you know, when a perspective or something can shift in how you look at something. So a lot of those works could be hung in multiple directions. Oh, cool. So you can kind of turn them around and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I think I can't really say like what generally sparks the inspiration. I guess you just stumble across something.
Yeah, it's just like, whatever gravitates.
Yeah, it'll be like you with your, you know, you might just see an image and you're like, I know I want to paint that, you know. But, yeah, the new work I'm sort of working on now, I'm looking a lot at technology and spirituality. I'm kind of quite interested in, you know, as we become kind of growingly, we're kind of becoming more and more atheist, like where do we put those spiritual aspects of being? I think that's still important, you know, and you see that a lot, you know, like a lot of friends have kind of moved into having psychedelic experiences. So I think there's a lot of looking back at kind of traditional ways of being spiritual that aren't around kind of conventional mono gods or, you know, because I think I've always been interested in how those, you know, they tied you into how you're part of the universe, the natural world, you know, how we fit in, how we connect to each other. And now, you know, with technology increasingly kind of actually creating divide between personal connection, even though it's connects us in new ways, you know, I guess post-COVID, it's kind of been interesting to watch how we have like, yeah, what are we losing in this sort of push towards technology?
So much.
Yeah.
So much.
I feel a lot, it's, actually. Yeah. I mean, it's either going to be our undoing or save us, and maybe both. I don't know.
Right. I mean, it's such an interesting and weird topic, our relationship to technology, because technology is amazing. I mean, the amount it's helped my life is like infinite.
Yeah.
It's creatively and making connections, but you know, I think like I said when I first started, I don't fucking read books anymore. My attention span is ruined from Instagram. It really is. I get halfway through a page or three quarters of the way through a page and I start swiping the
swiping the book.
No, I just like
vaguing out.
My hands, you know, just goes for my phone. But yeah.
I do try and read now because I was the same as you. And I still am incredibly distracted. But yeah, I try and read in the morning. Well, first thing when I wake up. I mean, obviously sometimes you've got to go to work or something, so you can't do that. But I can only read in the morning, really.
Yeah.
By the night, afternoon, I'm like, my brain's mushed too.
Yeah. What do you think is the trajectory of our collective spiritual, I don't know, this void that you talk about, as we do move more atheistic, which, I mean, it's kind of, in Australia, it's pretty, I don't know too many, I know religious people, but I don't know too many religious people.
Yeah.
America's another story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, look. Yeah.
It's not particularly cool to be Christian in our society, in our bubble, is it? Our world.
ScoMo and the fucking Hillsong guys, no way.
Right.
I don't know, look. And that's what I find interesting. But there's obviously, I mean, because I have always grown up being an atheist, you know, and my family, you know, religion featured in their upbringing. So that filtered down in aspects of your life, but they never brought me up to believe in God. So, but I find, there are sides of me that like want to connect on that juju level.
I crave it.
Yeah. And, you know.
But I also hate it. I'm so conflicted on it. I'm not hate it, but like the religious side, it's like I cringe, but I am attracted to it.
Yeah. Well, I think you kind of like, you know, you get a bit fade. You know, I think we're all wishing and hoping there's some way to guide us in our decisions of life. You know, I think it can be quite overwhelming to just have it be so open, and that's why we still gravitate towards things like star signs or you know, but yeah, look, you know, look, things like I'm quite interested in the whole psychedelic movement because I think that taps into consciousness and a group, I don't know, yeah,
mysticism hard. Almost.
Yeah,
yeah.
Because like, there's no way to really know what we're doing here or what's the reason. There's so much going on the planet, you know, like just the natural world, the diversity, like where we've come as a human race is so amazing. And I don't know, when you kind of just watch documentaries and just think we're just floating around on these rocks. I mean, are we just in the corner of someone's cupboard?
Yeah.
Like actually a piece of mold? And we're, you know, are these infinite universes just happening again and again and again? Who knows?
Yeah.
And I like that about, you know, psychedelics. It brings all those questions up and kind of taps you into speaking to a greater knowledge or something.
Totally.
But it's not as restrictive as religion, because I feel like, yeah, I hate those aspects where it's about controlling people or making them feel shit about being a human, you know?
Yep.
I think, you know, that has been a big downfall in our race, you know, is how harsh we are on ourselves mentally, internally, yeah. You know? And that's the interesting thing about, like, kind of doing things like meditation or just watching how the brain operates, how it can loop into these sort of negative things. So I hate that aspect of religion, you know, where it's like people feel so guilty for doing things that I think are completely natural and fine.
Yeah, know? Totally, totally. So, yeah, getting rid of that self-loathing. I mean, the way we treat ourselves, the way we talk to ourselves in our own heads is you'd never talk to someone else like that, right?
Yeah, I don't understand that about the brain, that it's so happy to hang on to that negative speak. And then so happy to discard the, like, positive. I mean, maybe we would just turn into horrible Kanye Wests if we didn't have that function in our heads.
Maybe. Yeah.
Maybe we'd be the worst.
I don't
know.
We
thought we were the best.
Yeah. But it is, like, that whole learning to make space in your life for self-love and your relationship to yourself has been, I think for me, it's a few things, but largely, it's been because of psychedelics that's allowed me to think like that.
Yeah.
It's very rare that in your life you can be overwhelmed with a feeling of euphoria and seemingly guidance of like a loving guide that's saying you're worthy when you have something like a DMT or an ayahuasca experience or even a mushroom trip. And without that kind of magical experience of feeling that, you kind of didn't almost... I found, didn't really know that's possible.
Yeah.
Your sober brain is just on one plane. I'm not saying everyone needs, like, it's not right for everyone, but it's, why can't we just access that?
I think people really benefit from experiencing it at least once.
Mm.
I mean, I often feel like the people that have negative experiences is because they're
resisting.
I should not say that because really I'm not like an authority, and there are people that it's chemistry as well, so you know there are people that have mental health issues and it can trigger bad things, but you know there are a lot of people I know that are like, oh no, I can't, and I kind of just feel like they're just not ready to face what the psychedelics want to tell them,
right?
You know, right. Like I had a very intense mushroom experience when I was just in my 20s, and I was, you know, at that point partying and taking lots of MDMA, and I remember like getting into a house party and they were all having mushroom honey, and I was like, oh, you know, how much? And they were like, oh, you just need this little bit. And I was like, a massive tablespoon. I was like, drugs don't affect me. And I literally was like tripping within like 5 minutes, and you know when you're like, I'm fucked, like this is and then I just went fetal on a couch on one of my poor friends' lap, just my head on their lap for an hour, just in the most intense mental vortex trip I've ever had. I've never had one that full on. And it was so full on, but coming through, I did feel euphoric. And after that, I just had so much respect for psychedelics. I was just like, I will never, ever treat them like that again. I felt like they just were like, we're going to fucking... we're going to show you what we can do, man.
Yeah, careful
like, this
now.
This is not just having a pinger and this dancing on the D floor. Like, There's some lesson shit here for you.
That was exactly the same as my first trip. I was just a total liability at Rainbow. I had one hit of acid and I was like, oh my God, I feel amazing. I'm seeing all the connections and nature's amazing. Then I'm like, my brain's like a pinger. I feel good. Yep. Let's double up and feel double good.
And just pushed it.
Two drops was just
too much.
Oh my God. I felt like I knew what it was like to be crazy.
Yeah.
I felt like it was, I knew, I experienced for a day what it was like to be a muttering person in the street with no connection to your fellow man and in your heads and you can't get your brain to stop. And again, coming out of that, it was a really horrible experience, but it was really beneficial long term. I had so much more of a respect for my brain, for my mind, what my mind is capable of, what these things are.
And the fact that you came back.
And I, exactly. And then I was just like, I need to figure out what that was.
Yeah.
And.
Oh, good on you for pursuing it. Because some people really would just be like, that was scary and I don't want to like experience that again.
Pursued it a little too much, Mo.
Totally. You should watch this movie called The Doors. I think it's interesting. And now probably that is the one I'm most interested in out of drugs because I feel like, and in making art, I mean, look, I think creative people often are drawn to those things like taking drugs or pushing the way they see the world. You know, I mean, that's part of what you do being an artist is you're kind of absorbing the world and reiterating it out in some form, you know?
Yeah.
So you're really sensitive to like, more sensitive, I think, to what's going on in the world, you know, like actually giving a shit about things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, in terms of the mind, I think that's another aspect of it, you know? It's like, how can we push our ways of seeing the world? Because, yeah, taking psychedelics transforms how you see the world. And once you see it that way, I think you carry it with it in your everyday. It's, you know, I mean, there are some times I'm out in nature and I've like, if I had taken drugs, I would think I was tripping.
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know what it is, but you just sort of, I don't know. I've seen the world that way and now I can see it again, like a trip.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know?
Yeah. One thing that it really allowed me to do is, looking at trees, for example, and seeing their personality almost.
Yeah.
Like you see the shapes and the bends that they've grown into and you're like, oh, you're that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Or, you're a feminine tree or you're a you're a cranky boy.
But who fucking knows? I mean, those trees probably do have personalities. Who knows? You know, like there's so much about the universe we just don't even understand. You know, we haven't even barely scraped the surface and, you know, there's plenty of evidence to show that plants communicate amongst themselves. You watch, you know, even how plants, you know, the more plants you have around each other, they seem to like it, you know, like.
I watched this amazing documentary. It was about, it was kind of, yeah, it was of the same kind of vein as like fantastic fungi kind of thing, but it was about trees and plants and it was talking about how they do have relationships with them and some are social and some. Some when they actually die, like in forests, they will fall over, die. There'll just be a stump left, but the other roots of their family trees actually kind of connect, and they still transmit nutrients. And the stump that looks like a completely dead stump, they can actually scratch back and tell that it's still alive. They're
That's
actually keeping
amazing.
Them still alive, and they'll also do really strange things where they will. I think also through the help of mycelium, but they'll help share nutrients to their neighboring, and they're quite social, but their children trees, like that have actually grown around them, they will favor the mother tree will often favor
their babies
in terms of, I'm probably butchering this, but nutrients and proteins and water and things.
Isn't
and they help each other, but they prioritize. They prioritize who they help.
It's not just like we're just helping everyone that's in my immediate vicinity.
And there's things where if someone starts chopping down trees, they've been able to test that they will change their chemical basis to warn others or make them taste different because of like an invasive species and to try and scare them.
they do it with animals. So I think like right. when giraffes
yeah.
or whatever would be eating these trees, whatever, they would send it out to be make it taste not as appetizing so they don't eat it.
It's just incredible.
What's... And that's what I mean. Like there's knowledge and intelligence like everywhere. I mean, look, you know, I remember my mum used to laugh that my first existential moment was like I came in. I used to like to feed the ants out on the on the thing. I was obsessed with ants, and she would like often find the sugar bowl out there. And she said one day I came home and I was like, "Mum, why wasn't I born an ant?" And she was like, "Her first existential moment." But I've always been obsessed with, you know, like just like how these insects, even bees or whatever, they function, like these full societies, you know, like they've all got their job to do. They do different things. They're like a society, you know, and how can we think that there's not like, there's obviously communication going on between animals too, you know, like you, birds or whatever, they're talking to each other, you know. And so I just think we're very blindsided by our own kind of experience of being human, and maybe that's the beauty of us taking a trip, is you connect into the possibilities of something much grander, you know, happening that we can't explain. And maybe that's what I'm interested in with all the spiritualism stuff, that there's always going to be an aspect of things we can't explain, and that's where the spiritual world lives. You know,
it is like a God-like experience. It is like a divine, well, depending on what psychedelic you're taking and the dose, but it does evoke a divine experience for some. It has for me. That's why I don't really consider myself atheist anymore. I'm not a believer in God, but I don't know it to be false. Yeah. I don't think God is what we've painted it as in terms of like religious ideas of God.
Yeah.
I think it might just be some source,
some
kind of source pool that we're all just a slight expression of. And we're all like the very phenomenon of consciousness, the very phenomenon that something that a metaphorical eye has opened in this space and time. That's almost the miracle. That's almost the fundamental. That's the God, and we are just bits of that. Like, I mean, I don't fucking know what I'm talking about, but it's...
But, I mean,
when
look,
you break
I
it down, it's
living
it's
is
a
making
miracle.
Sense of it all, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, and as you're getting older, I mean, I guess when you're younger, you're just consumed in experiencing living. But as you're kind of mature and become an adult and face mortality more, you kind of do wonder what it's all about. And, you know, I mean, look, it's crazy when you actually start to look at consciousness and you go, what is free will? What is like, who is that having that thought? Like, where is that coming from? I mean, sometimes you're having like, not to sound like a crazy person, but like I'll literally be having a conversation with two aspects of myself.
Yeah.
You know, and like even sometimes cracking myself up. Like you're just like
crack
a cool joke, you know? And you're like, fuck. Like what's that voice? What's that voice? Who are these like influences? And there's all these aspects of your personality sort of entwined in your mind. But what triggers those things? It's really fascinating stuff, I reckon. And I mean, I would love to do a ceremony one day. I'm just a bit resistant, I think, because I'm worried I won't like what they do.
An ayahuasca ceremony?
Yeah.
I'm off to do one today.
Oh, it's exciting. You have to tell me what it's like.
Sure.
Have you done one?
I've done one, okay. But I didn't really break through on that one. And the shaman that I had was a fucking cunt.
Well, this is what
he
I worry
sucked.
About.
He was fucking a total ego-tripping douche.
I think a lot of people that do that stuff, I'm just worried that's what it'll be like, and my bullshit factor will just be like, I cannot watch this Swami dude in like white yoga pants like tell me how to take drugs. Because I guess you've had I like the idea of being guided, but it's like who becomes a shaman anyway? I mean, half these people, you're like, are you really? Like...
Yeah. It's a funny, I've got mixed feelings about the whole new age
aspect of it.
Yeah, or culty vibes too. And it's not to say it's a cult, but it's...
No, know. I think in some ways it is, because it's a very intense experience, and I think people get very, like, you know, like people have amazing breakthroughs, and then I think they become addicted to that experience. But like also the people facilitating it, you know, like there must be something about being adored or so needed, or like being such an authority on something that is so revelatory for people that, you know. Yeah,
I think a lot of it just comes down to intention. And like, so I had this other facilitator with some 5-MeO DMT a year ago, and just the loveliest human, just nurturing, and that was it. And I think a lot of the facilitators are that, and they're just really nurturing. They might have their own ideas, they might have their own things about borrowing from, you know, Peruvian culture or whatever, and they're upholding that, and that's cool, that's sick. But I think it all just boils down to the intention, and are they nurturing? Are they helping? Are they there for you? And the first shaman I had was not. It was just all about the ceremony, and he was yelling at people for not upholding the ceremony while they're under the influence of an intense psychedelic for the first time.
You can't tell people how to be.
Yeah, like, it was really strange. I was just like, anyway, it was not.
Because I do worry about that too. Like, what about the other people? I guess like in the past, I've always just taken like acid around people I love, and if someone's doing something annoying, you've got a connection. But I'm like, what if there's just someone next to me that's like ruining everything with their bad trip or something, you know?
Yeah.
And that part. But how many people go, do you know? It's a mystery.
No idea.
Is it in nature or?
No idea.
Okay.
No idea.
Just take you on a mystery bus and you're dumped in?
Just got an address.
Sick. All right. Well, I'll have to quiz you a bit about that.
Keep you posted.
Yeah, exactly. I'll be DMing you about to see how you go.
It's my yearly spiritual binge. I love it. Do no practice throughout the year. No upholding. No integration. And then just jump into the deep end of a cold plunge.
There's a lot of
plunge,
people
you know?
That go to church once a year too. Totally. So you're not alone there.
Do you think you'd ever do a body of work that's inspired by these kind of experiences or realms, or is it?
Yeah, this work I think is kind of it's not psychedelic, probably. I don't know. Like, I think all the work, I think there have been aspects of the work. Probably the visitors already tapped into some part of that because they're coming from psychedelic imagery, and I feel like this new work I'm looking at is kind of touching in on that. So it's sort of looking at how we kind of worship technology. So I'm kind of mixing that with deities and
techno deities.
Yeah, Zuck. Exactly. Elon. I am, you know, I'm of the Terminator 2 generation, so I'm all about robotic dystopian futures, you know.
Totally.
But yeah, so I think that's an element of it, but it's still, you know, meant to be a little bit humorous. It's not all dark or anything.
Yeah, your work does have like a really kind of a bit of humor in it, a bit of like light, really playful a lot of the time, like you know, I think we both have chatted about, you know, like Pip Ryan and the Ryan sisters, their work. It's just absolutely love what they do.
I love how they collab and their separate practices as well.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, they're totally. Really, they've been killing it lately.
They work very hard.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
I think that's the thing. Like, you can look at artists, but, you know, if they're doing really well, it's because they're working fucking their asses off generally.
Right.
You know, I think, you know, yeah, like it's a hard thing, but you've just got to keep plugging away and, you know, entering competitions and getting your face out there and, you know.
I do love that kind of style of art, and it's nothing like what I make, but it is that almost like connection with the inner child or something. And it's that really, like, what are some other artists that you like? You mentioned before James Lemon, Pip and Nat Ryan.
Yeah, so I do like a lot of sculptural work.
Ramesh, you mentioned.
Yeah, I do like Ramesh. I definitely
forget his surname.
Gravitate towards a lot of outsider art.
Yeah.
Because I do like, I think that's the thing. Like, I mean, my parents both, I kind of grew up around the art world. My parents both had creative jobs and were artists as well.
Oh, cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. My father's a painter. That's probably why. Really? I'm like, yeah.
What kind of painter?
Well, he does like oil painting and stuff.
Great.
But he also worked a lot in theatre, so set design.
Like backgrounds and things like that?
Or no, he designed sets. Oh, wow. And costume design as well.
Wow.
So I had an excellent dress-up box as a kid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Of leftover costumes and things like that. And then mum was a jeweller. She was gold and silversmith. And then when she left her practice, she went to work in an art school teaching art theory. So it's sort of like the family. I mean, they separated when I was six. So, you know, two separate worlds. But they, you know, obviously it's a bit of a family business, art, I think, you know. They'll be like, wish you'd become a lawyer.
Yeah, I know, that's the rebellion side. Your kids are going to grow up to be
Saffy, you know, I want to be.
Yeah, totally. Real estate agents, navy blue suits.
Exactly.
Fuck your art, mum.
Fuck that, I'm going to have superannuation.
Going to be a capo dog.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, so I grew up a lot in, you know, going to openings and falling asleep on under tables on the handbag and stuff like that. So I think in that respect, I've always really liked outside art because I think I like things that move outside of the gallery sphere and kind of speak to everyone. And that's probably an aspect of work I like, that I find it a bit more of an equalizer. And I feel like people can kind of, I mean, that was the interesting thing about moving into collage was with photography, they kind of would look at the photographs and be scared to comment on it because they didn't know what it was about. Or they were scared of looking stupid or like not getting it. Whereas I think with the collages, people feel totally entitled to have their response and love it, or it's not their one, but they like this one or whatever. And that's sort of gone for them. And I love that, you know, because I want to connect with people. I like public art spaces and things that, you know, where art kind of can kind of integrate into the everyday life rather than just being, you know, I think it's important to still have galleries and have artists that are working in that capacity. But yeah, for me, I like, yeah, stuff everyone can approach on.
Are you into many other collage artists?
Yeah, no, I do. But to tell you the truth, I don't really follow, because a lot of them use photo media. They kind of do that traditional aspect of, yeah. So probably, yeah.
There is a thing also when there's almost an aversion in many different styles of art, an aversion to artists that are similar to you. I've really learned that you never, if there's an artist that reminds you of someone's work, don't show them.
Yeah, yeah.
Don't show them. Yeah. They're never happy.
Yeah, totally.
The artist is never like, oh, cool, yeah, awesome. They're really similar. Thanks for pointing that out.
Yeah, totally.
They're like, this person's biting my style, or this person's doing it way better than me, or you think my shit looks like that?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, exactly.
Never show someone art that reminds them of your art.
Just no, it's true. And maybe that's, you know, maybe I'm helping myself by having such a laboriously stupid practice, is that, you know, it's harder for people to copy,
right?
Because
right.
they're just like, spend, you know, half an hour trying to get the sticky bits off the paper, and they're like, God, fuck this.
Are you using scissors or scalpels or?
Yeah, I just use paper scissors, like just normal big ones.
Do you get any RSI or anything like that?
Not yet.
No,
I'm waiting though.
Yeah,
fuck.
Yeah,
yeah. No, I try and like vary a little bit, but it's been okay so far. I sort of just mix it up. I'll cut a bunch of stuff up and then lay it down. So I guess it's not, you've got to just keep changing the movement.
But, yeah.
If I have a very like busy week, you know, like I'm under pressure, yeah, occasionally your thumb gets a bit sore, but it's not been too bad so far.
Yeah.
So lucky.
Fantastic.
Fingers crossed. Fantastic. Well, I still can.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah.
And so when's your show coming up? Jan or Feb?
In Feb.
And where's
so
it going to be?
So first week at Feb at the PG Gallery, Printmaker Gallery on Brunswick Street.
Yep.
So really lovely people. And it'll be nice.
How
going to Brunswick Street.
How many works are you going to try?
I'm still making it. Don't tell them that. But But I'm hoping I'll have like 10 works, yeah. I think, yeah. by then.
That's much more of a reasonable amount for an exhibition.
Like, yeah, I'm
your
not
first
doing...
one was giant.
No, and these are all larger pieces, so...
Great.
Yeah, I think, yeah, hopefully I'll have 10. And I think that will fit in the space well, so that's my aim.
Do you have a title?
Lost Civilization.
Ooh, nice.
I like a little pun.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, so it's sort of, yeah, looking at, yeah, the idea is like all the techno rubble that we would find, what would we kind of pertain from where we are as a society if we were looking back, you know, because I'm quite interested in archaeological digs and how they kind of like try and piece society back together from a series of objects or the little bits of text or, you know, so it's like what would we leave from right now? What would they kind of ascertain as what we idolize, what we love, what we cherish.
And
it's our iPhones, basically.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, looking back at every other moment in history, it's the art, the design and the architecture. It's the creative force of the civilization that defines them, right?
Yeah.
Maybe that's lost.
Yeah.
Maybe our works won't last. Maybe the...
Who knows? But maybe they will. And, you know, maybe they'll be like, well, look.
NFTs won't. NFTs won't.
Yeah.
They're gone.
Oh, my God. Oh, no. God. I know.
Or maybe they will. Maybe they'll be like, find these fossils of fucking USB sticks and they'll like recreate them in the future. And it's like
someone will be
some fucking twerking giant ass implanted woman.
I can't open Photoshop too.
Yeah.
You know, how do we rewrite the code? No.
Totally.
I know. I mean, look, that's part of the reason I started. I actually am overwhelmed by technology and, you know, like, you know, I started out with photography. Now I'm just the digital aspect of the sheer volume of images and what you do with it and where you store it. And, you know, it's kind of like, I find it overwhelming, the whole technical stuff.
Yeah.
Technology stuff. So yeah. You know, I mean, look, all this shit in the cloud and like, what do you do? Even when someone dies, you're like, where, like their life is in this techno cloud and like, how did, it's not like you would find the photos in a box like you used to, or, you know, objects have kind of become in this weird sphere and, you know, all it will take is one crazy solar storm and we'll probably lose half of it anyway, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's kind of an interesting time. I think that's why I'm very, I like the physical. I like art. I like, you know, I couldn't, NFTs just go straight over my head. I'm like, I don't get it.
Most people.
I don't understand what's going on.
I am terrified about what's left after I die.
Yeah.
Like the digital footprint.
Yeah.
the face, like the old... The old photos on Facebook of me at 21 being drunk, like, it's totally. So, it's just it's just evidence against
me. Whole life. But it kind of holds you. Like, it still holds me to Facebook because there's a part of me that still wants that record to be there. But, like, I don't know. Yeah, it's very bizarre. I had a funny experience where we had our cousins, they're my mum's cousins. So they're, you know, in their 70s or whatever. And they were French and they came out and then one of them followed me on Instagram and I got back home and he'd liked 100 photos on
just
Instagram.
All of them, liked all
like,
of just, them.
Yeah, it was like being trolled or something. I was just like, and so I was kind of going through them because I was like, what's he liked out of my, you know, heaps of cock and ball references. I was like, he's obviously got a great sense of humor too. But I kind of, another part of me felt sad. It was like pre-COVID and you're like, oh, fuck, like... Yeah, this was a version of my life, but it's like this really important record of time. But then, I don't know, at the same time, I was a bit like, oh, God, everything's changed so much, you know. So I think we're kind of like married to these, yeah, they've become the new photo albums or the, you know, and like how crazy that someone can just go back and search Jack Roland and be able to find, yeah,
awful.
All these weird...
Awful,
of
awful
you at Rainbow.
Memory, yeah. I I think that's when I came good. Yeah, it's just the drinking pre-rainbow version of me.
Well, you can always delete it, I guess, what you don't want to see. But maybe, you know, I kind of feel like keep all those parts of you, you know. It's like finding your diary, you know. It's like, oh it's my God. Horrible.
Speaking of diary, we've got...
Oh, God.
We've got to do a podcast with you and Stan and get your high school diary.
Oh,
on
my record. God.
Maybe that's too much.
To tell you the truth, that was liberating.
That could be a whole podcast series. I mean, what's the backstory?
We should give the backstory. Yeah. When I lived with our mutual friend, I found my diary from when I was 13 when I lived with him, and he wanted to read it, which I wouldn't let him do because I was just in a shame spiral of how like psycho it was. But he had this like incredibly un-PC character. He's like Eugene, who is pretty much Eastern European.
Eugene.
Eugene.
Hey, man.
He was like, let me read it as Eugene. And I have to say, having an Eastern European man read a 13-year-old's horny thoughts is actually hilarious. And yeah, it was pretty funny. But that was kind of liberating because it was like you carrying all this shame of like how embarrassing it was, like all that. And then him reading it and just having all these people laugh at like,
you are such a good sport about that because it could be so embarrassing, but you just like embraced it and it turned into like that could just be its own podcast in itself.
God,
like the secret diary of.
I think it helped that we were like raucously drunk. Yeah. We were listening. Maybe if all the listeners got drunk before they listened.
That's,
But yeah, I mean, look, like I said, it was, you know, that was kind of a good experience because you kind of freed yourself up from that shame or those shitty feelings and you realize no one gives a shit. Like no one actually, we're all too busy worrying about ourselves to really care about what other people thought when they were 12.
Yeah. it's just so much gold in there. I love it.
Oh, well, next time, I'll bring the diary down. We can do some excerpts.
I'm into it. Awesome. Mo, thank you so much for coming
on. Thanks for having me.
Way overdue. Way overdue. But yeah.
It was lovely to chat with you.
Absolutely.
I hope you have a great ceremony this afternoon.
Thanks. Mm. Thank you. We'll see. Maybe I'll come back with the God complex.
Yeah, totally. We'll listen to your next podcast.
Awesome.
Kanye.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thanks, Mo. Thanks for listening, everyone. See ya. Bye.